Hi, everyone, and thank you for coming to my presentation titled Health Information for Medically Underserved Hispanic Women from the Provider's Perspective. I want to take a moment and say thank you to my co-authors, and especially to Christina Suduth and Coralia Vasquez Otero, who are here with us today. I have no personal financial relationships to disclose. The significance and background of our study, we decided to focus on the Hispanic population because, as we know, this is a rapidly growing minority in our country. They're currently the largest minority group in the United States, and many of the recently immigrated Hispanics who've come here lack the necessary documentation to have health care, and not only health care, but to have quality health care. We decided to focus on Hispanic women in particular because they are a minority within a minority, and we know that they are doubly disadvantaged when trying to access care and treatment. The purpose of this study was qualitative. We did it for a class, and so we decided to do an exploratory study of providers' experiences with giving healthcare information to medically underserved Hispanic women at free or federally qualified healthcare clinics. I will be saying FQHC for the rest of the presentation. We also decided to do it with key informants because we figured that this would give us a really rich perspective on who on the patients and give us a variety of different perspectives. Our research questions guided the study, and we wanted to really know the experiences of providing care to this population. What was it like for them? What are the successes and challenges that healthcare providers face when providing healthcare to medically underserved Hispanic women? And then lastly, we wanted to know how are these providers tailoring treatment to better serve this population? For our eligibility criteria, we interviewed anyone who had at any time worked at a free clinic or at an FQHC in the Tampa Bay area. And this included medical providers, social workers, health educators, clinic staff, and managers. Our interview guide was developed through an iterative process. We had four pilot interviews that we did, and we removed questions for redundancy and refined it through this process. And we also included a short demographic survey. Our interviews were pretty standard. We had verbal consent from each participant, and we audio recorded the interviews. We had three transition questions, nine key questions, and then two closing. The interviews lasted from 25 to 35 minutes, and then our team transcribed them verbatim. These are some of the examples of the questions that we asked. We wanted providers to describe their overall experience, the good, the bad, everything. And we really wanted to know how their background prepared them to work with medically underserved Hispanic women. So this meant personal background, professional, their education level, anything that brought them to this field. We also wanted to know what types of health information that was being given out in their clinics and what was being disseminated to these women. And also we wanted to know the common health needs that medically underserved Hispanic women have when coming to the clinic. And then, of course, we wanted to know the successes or the good experiences that the providers have had with giving care, and also the challenges. And then specifically, to understand the culture, we wanted to know the characteristics that made it easy to provide the needed information. And we also wanted to know what makes it challenging, so that we could really get to how these characteristics are taken into consideration when providing the information. Our data collection consisted of eight interviews, and we know this is a small sample size, but even with the eight interviews, we're estimating that about 20,000 patient visits could have been included in this. So it would have really reached a great deal of our patients that we're trying to understand. And we had, like I said, we had a variety of we had practitioners, we had a physician's assistant, we had a practical nurse, we had a variety of different people. It didn't necessarily have to be a medical provider. Our experience, for years of experience in the field, was from 8 to 20 years. So we had a lot of experience with this group. And we had 5 Hispanic people and then 7 people who spoke Spanish. And it was the majority of our respondents were female. For the analysis, we used deductive codes. Each member of the study team had 2 deductive codes that we were looking for, and that's how we developed our code book. And then the family of codes were identified based on the research questions. As you can see, barriers, patient barriers, provider barriers, health information, just general experiences, successes, challenges, and common health needs. We coded using the Atlas TI software, and then we developed inductive codes as we went. Each researcher made a finding summary, and then 2 authors summarized the data and looked for overarching themes. And this is what we found. The types of healthcare information being provided had to do with healthy lifestyles. So a lot of the patients were coming in needing advice on maybe how to improve their diet or how to exercise, things of that nature. Also, healthcare navigation. For these patients, it's very tough to get through the system. If, for example, someone is diagnosed with cancer, knowing how to navigate that system, how to go to appointments, how to access care, this was a huge topic. Also, this population really is in need of social services resources, maybe a social worker, maybe transportation services or housing. So these providers are really doing a lot. They're doing more than just medical care. And then, of course, providers are giving disease-specific information. Every single provider that we interviewed mentioned that diabetes was discussed with this population. And of course, we've got hypertension, sexual and reproductive health, and smoking cessation, as well as cancer prevention. The preferred method for providers, by far and away, was one-on-one verbal communication with the patient. Tailored treatment and one-on-one conversations was definitely the most popular. But also, group seminars such as charlas were very important to this population, being able to talk in a group of people that had similar struggles or that might have a similar disease. Also, providers were very creative with written documents and graphic, rich text, because a lot of the patients can't read or maybe can't write. So using visual symbols and things of that nature were really helpful. And then also health educators and social workers were very popular because they can spend the extra one-on-one time with the patients. In terms of language and literacy, we found that there were lots of linguistic variations in the Spanish language. Maybe something that sounds a certain way in one country doesn't translate over fully, and so there were some miscommunications with that. Also, patients might speak indigenous languages. 2 providers mentioned the Mazateco language as being a barrier to communicating with this population because there aren't many people in the United States that speak it, and then there might be a language line for the provider to use to clarify. However, this is not usually going to be an option, so that was definitely a barrier for people. The use of medical terminology in Spanish is not common. It's not like an everyday conversation topic, so this was a challenge. Also, as I mentioned before, the low literacy rate of the population can make things difficult when trying to provide even medication. Thinking about that, like some of the providers would mention that on their prescription bottles they would have a moon to signify, oh, we'll take your medication at night. So being creative with getting to this population in that way and using simplified language as well as trained interpreters. We also found some positives in terms of the cultural competency of the providers. This particular provider mentioned knowing the migratory patterns of this population, knowing that they like to travel, so making more staff available when the patients are available. Additionally, understanding sort of how this population accesses care and treatment, it might take a patient a day to come for an appointment. They might have to call off work, take multiple methods of transit to their appointment. And so knowing this and working with that, offering alternative times where patients can receive care, maybe afternoons and evenings are better. And also taking advantage of patient wait time. A lot of patients are going to wait a long time to see a doctor, and so providing continuous educational experiences as they go along in the wait room and things like that. Nutrition education and like understanding the cultural competency of this, offering things that are healthy but also kind of fit into the Hispanic culture. Adobo and sazon are spices that are used, but a lot of the patients might not know that they're available in lower sodium or that they might have them without MSG. So just knowing this population, knowing how they cook, and then being able to sort of provide alternatives. Another cultural competency issue that was also a benefit and a challenge was the family dynamic situation. A lot of patients come in with their whole family to receive treatment, and it's a group situation, which is actually it's a really positive thing. It can help to have family members involved in treatment, but it can also be a challenge when a patient family might not agree with the treatment that's being provided. And so, striking a happy medium where you can involve the family, but still get the treatment plan across. It was also noted by a variety of providers that using family members as interpreters is not regarded as best practice, but it does happen. In terms of health literacy, there were a number of things that came up from the patient perspective. In the Hispanic population, there are different methods that are popular, and they may or may not be helping the symptoms that they're experiencing. For example, Herbalife is very popular among this population, and it's a dietary supplement. A lot of folks think that it might cure everything, but sometimes it can even interfere with treatment, so providers mentioned that as a challenge. Also, medications being sent from the home country could interfere with the treatment that the provider is trying to give. Also, some of the patients just didn't understand their symptoms. For example, one provider explained that a patient thought that their fingers and toes were cold because they worked in a cold factory. Well, that wasn't necessarily the case. The patient was diabetic. So finding a way to explain that. Also, just understanding how to navigate the system. I mentioned before it's really difficult when someone has cancer, and understanding the care that needs to be followed up on, and to get a patient through that. Some novel methods that we encountered when talking with providers for giving information included texting. This kind of surprised us, but it does actually, it's very effective. Patients are definitely tapped into the electronic world. Also, one very cool story, there was an avatar that was used on a tablet in a patient waiting room. So having the avatar, it was an electronic kind of person talking to the patient. So educating them on HPV and things like that. And then a novella model would be, it's like a kind of a story rather than bullet point treatment. It's a story that involves like the lives and the family of the patient and treatment. And then also the empowerment model where the patient is taking control of their health. So these were some successful methods that we found. In terms of future work, we found that the one-on-one is the preferred method for providers, and providing one-on-one treatment is great, but it's very costly. Taking one-on-one time with a patient is wonderful, but It takes a lot of resources and coordination. So becoming creative with the way that we provide care to this population, and also knowing that some challenges that we see in terms of cultural competency could actually be opportunities. So figuring out what it is about the population that might be a challenge, but using it as a benefit, is where we see future work headed. In terms of health literacy, using the creative methods that we've talked about, like the avatar, the texting, and finding alternative methods to reach this group, is where the future work could head. And a special thank you to the University of South Florida College of Public Health Student Honorary Award for Research and Practice for funding this. And here's a pretty picture of Tampa. Thank you.